Because if you're doing something every day, in every action that you do that is selfless or that is putting somebody else, not in front of you, but next to you, then that is going to do way more than you doing one big act one time.
Welcome to A Curious Yogi Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby, joined by living masters and awakening friends. We're here to illuminate your practice as we explore what it means to walk the yogi's path, to unfold peace from within, and to live the vision of oneness. I'm so delighted you're here. Now let's get curious.
So I think we'll just freestyle it. And we'll bounce back and forth. The topic is seva, service, charity, living that way as a part of our sadhana. And I'll ask you a little bit about you, and we'll set the scene. And at the end, we'll give a few minutes about our retreat.
Okay, sure.
Okay?
Sure.
So, swaha.
Swaha, thank you. Looks good.
Pancakes and podcasts.
P&P.
P&P with S&B. So welcome back to A Curious Yogi Podcast. To all the listeners and to Simon, welcome.
Tuck.
This is the intro, and we're just going to go for it. So before we start our conversation, I just want to thank all the listeners for being here and to remind them, if they love the podcast, they want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/acuriousyogipodcast and join for free actually. But the paid subscribers get access to our monthly satsang, which is amazing. And I'm saying that here because, Simon, you were the one that really motivated me to actually get a Patreon page, probably because I was complaining about how much work it is.
Yeah, and now it's there and it's going, and if you're finding value on the show or off the show, you should definitely check out the Patreon.
Definitely. And also, one other thing I wanted to say, that I'm offering Wednesday and Friday yogasana classes on Zoom if anybody wants to join and practice together. So, tick, tick. Pancakes finished. Plugs finished for now. And welcome to this week's guest. Some people that are listening to the show or that are subscribed on my newsletter might just know you as Nurse Yogi. But he actually is Simon Yalonen, my partner and my fellow yogi, my travel companion, one of my BFFs, and just partner in freedom. So welcome, Simon, to the show. I think I already welcomed you, but I'll welcome you again.
I'll take it.
Okay, good. So, and I'm going to just freestyle a little bio intro here. Simon is, yes, he's a yogi, he's a meditator. We met in India at our yoga teacher training, but he's a registered nurse here in Sweden, and he's someone that really lives his life in service, which I think is very suiting for this week's topic, this week's theme, which is why I asked Simon to come on the show and talk together. And actually, I wanted to have you on the show for a long time, but this felt like the perfect moment where we can talk about seva and service. A, because it's in your profession, and B, because we're leading up to the fundraiser for Positive Lam Foundation. We'll talk about that later, but it just kind of all came together perfectly as someone that's a yogi, you're a meditator, we're in this practice together, and you really, your life is kind of in service. Would you say that's an accurate sort of small bio intro?
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I came for the pancake, stayed for the conversation.
Yeah, and you might hear the echo in the recording. We're here in our new flat in Sweden, and it's pretty empty, so it's a little echoey, but it's perfect. Simon, I'd love if you could start off the conversation by just giving your perspective or your opinion of how spiritual practice or your sadhana, the aspect of your spiritual life, is interrelated or connected to that aspect of service or charity. Do you see in your own life that they're two separate aspects or one and the same?
Good question. I think for me, they intertwine very much. Because in service, like from my point of view, working in healthcare, it's so much service to other persons. But service can be towards anything, really, or anyone, not only human beings. But in service, you're acknowledging that there is something or someone that has worth, as much worth as you. And in that, I find there is spirituality in that, to see the value and a worth, rather, in a person, in a thing that's equal to your own. And like, I think that gets lost a lot of the time in the race to become the best and to become something other or apart from others. And in service, you acknowledge that whatever the person or animal or whatever is going through, there is worth there. There is value. And I find if we can see that in all, we can also go beyond that. And for me, that's very spiritual to find that worth. Because if I can see that worth in others, I definitely can see it in myself.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because like we do live in such an individualistic society that doesn't prioritize, well, I guess in Sweden, the collective is taken care of. But on the individual personal level, there is that sense of me and mine, rather than looking to the kind of the light behind everybody's eyes as one and the same. Like where we place our worth in the world as human beings, like tends to just be on what's ours, what we feel is ours. So when you were speaking, I was like thinking, wow, that's so beautiful. If all healthcare professionals had some kind of element in their training that, or maybe you did, I don't know, that helps the practitioner to arrive at that awareness that everybody is equal, each being is equal or has that same worth or value that you're talking about. Like, do you think that the healthcare would be a little bit different?
I would say we have that training. Okay. Like, there is that element of, obviously, at least on the human form level, there is definitely the element of that all humans have a value, regardless of where you're coming from, regardless of race or ethnicity. That doesn't matter. That was definitely part of my education, and it should be everywhere, and I think it is. But I think everybody knows that by heart, but we tend to forget not those base things, like where you're coming from or whatever. We still see that a human being has a value in its core. But then that gets shaped or it gets twisted after, depending on actions. So people, somebody does an action that doesn't ring with your, what you find is good, or what you find is right, then that value lessens. So at a base, I think everybody knows that there's a human value by just existing, having that existence. But when people are thinking differently to you, when they're doing things that are not going right by you or what you believe in, then that value and sense decreases.
Mm.
And I think working and meeting so many people where you see that, okay, maybe in my mind, in my values, this person has made a lot of mistakes that I, like, I don't respect this person's actions, but I still treat that person with that same respect and value and worth that I know the person has. And well, I'm only speaking from like my part at least from my occupation, but like I think it's so important in the profession that regardless you have to treat everybody with that same respect. And and here maybe comes that little spiritual aspect in it, that you see beyond your actions and everything else, and you see that highest worth and or highest value, and you can meet that person in that.
Yeah, I like how you differentiated, or not differentiated, but added that spiritual component. Because it makes sense what you're saying, that we all have that sort of innate knowing, like kids, for example, and young people, like before they get all those beliefs and ideas and shaping, like you said, impressed on them, there is that just kind of pure space where people, kids kind of exist and play, and it's not about that. Even they, you can see how quickly kids forgive and forget. But then slowly, those beliefs and values get so crystallized. And then because we have our individual mechanism and ego and society and families that we grow up on, we sort of get so crystallized into those beliefs. And then when something doesn't reflect that, like you said, then, yeah, that value that we see lessens. But I think the thing that differentiates or kind of adds to someone, whether you're working in healthcare or just like functioning in the world as a human being in any job, in any relationship, how our own attachments to our beliefs and ideas can shape the way we see another and can help us and can make us feel small and contracted and separate from the whole, from the group, because of our attachment to those ideas. Like, I believe this, and Simon didn't reflect that, so he's wrong. And so then there's that division that takes place. Even though, like you said, at the essence, there is that knowingness of all life is valuable, all life is worthy. So to me, in the way like that I move in the world, it feels like so essential that I have a spiritual practice, that I have a yoga practice, a meditation practice, to kind of each day drop back into that space of all life is value, or all life is worthwhile, because what is life? It's that all permeating flow that's in each flower, in each person. But without that kind of dip in each day, it gets harder and harder to hold that space or remember that. So I'm wondering how your practice shapes your work and also your life, because as your partner, I know that you meditate daily and you do invest time each day into that space. And I'm wondering what your meditation practice is and how it carries you through your life.
Yeah, like right now or for quite some time now, I do have a daily meditation practice. And in that, for me, I think it's just about having a stillness. Because in regular life, everything is so chaotic and hectic, and work can especially be a part of that hectic. So I found that after having a regular practice, it really helped me still that chaos within, even when it's chaos outside of me. So it's been really helpful in that sense of just being able to stay calm, I would say. But it's also to dip into that, or to remember maybe that value and worth in myself that is not different to anybody else. To be able to remember that daily also help me when I meet other people and trying to be of service, to again remember that, okay, this is, I'm meeting someone that is actually not apart from me. And again, that's the old saying, like, treat others as you would like to be treated yourself. And like, if you can remember that value and worth in yourself and in others, then it's easier to work and to live from that also, to treat other people like you yourself would like to be treated. Mm-hmm. And like you said, that your own practice is so important. For myself, having a daily thing where I put time, usually in the morning, but I'm trying to keep that fresh, because I think also, we discussed this a little bit just before we started recording about discipline, and like I see myself as somewhat pretty disciplined, and I can follow a discipline very rigorously, but then after my meditation practice, is it just gone? Like then I go about my day and chaos is running through my head and outside, but at least I did my meditation. So I do try to keep it fresh in ways, like all through the day, which is, it's a challenge in itself. But yeah, I think for me, the past, all my life, is just, and also with your podcast name, A Curious Yogi, like to be curious and not to get too stuck in one idea or one way of doing, being, living, but to constantly try things out and see what works, and as long as it doesn't take me too far away from that knowing, then yeah, then I can still dabble with different types of practices.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Two things I thought of when you were speaking. One was how, before we started recording also, you're reading a Krishnamurti book right now, and something that popped out in what you read to me was that the intelligence isn't dependent on the discipline. And it kind of sparked something because it made me think about how, like, when we operate just from our mind ego kind of mechanism of like discipline and routines and to-do lists, which we need all of those things, yes, but when we can approach like a kind of balance of part of our life with that flow of that creative intelligence, then things are fresh. Because like, to me, what is freshness? It is being in a flow with that intelligence, and yes, picking up the kind of left brain skills when required, which is very difficult for me, like the discipline and those kind of things. But how we kind of need both, and like existing as a functioning human in the world and a kind, good-hearted person that's not too rigid and stuck in the ideas, like it does require a kind of dance. And I have a hard time when I have to get into those sort of mundane day-to-day things, it's also very easy for me to kind of forget the space and get overwhelmed or get frustrated, you know, like those kind of things come up. And yet, even that in itself is like a kind of sadhana, because it's so easy to divide and say like, this is my spiritual life, or this is my morning meditation practice, and then this is my relationship, and this is my job. When actually, if I can remember that flow is there through everything, it kind of makes everything a little bit easier. And something else you said made me think of unconditional, well, as soon as we open our eyes and we move into the world, just naturally, there's a condition that's placed upon our relationships or our happiness in our job. Because it's like you said right at the beginning, if the person in front of me or the situation in front of me doesn't reflect my belief system, my value, then it doesn't have the condition to take my respect. But actually how having the meditation practice, the spiritual practice, draws the awareness into that space of unconditional acceptance, we can say, or love or oneness, but where there actually is no condition, because conditions only exist on the level of the mind. And it's not like an end, or it's not like a one or the other. It's like we need both. We have to still have conditions to keep us safe and make choices and everything. But when we only fixate on the conditions which allow us to say, have a good day, or have a good day at work, or like these pancakes we just had, like my condition was to have like the ideal pan, my breakfast was ruined because like I couldn't figure out the pan, you know what I mean? But if like we can even approach mundane tasks from this creative flow, which is unconditional, then it's a kind of funness, a kind of lightness, or like you said, freshness in the spiritual practice, in the life, and in the way that we serve and share that space with others. And I'm just remembering that this quote, which we were also just talking about quotes, in Nisargadatta, where he says that the only way to be charitable is to be beyond the need of charity. And like we can think about that sure in terms of just like where you stand economically or in the privilege ladder, but actually getting beyond the need of charity to me means living in that space of unconditional kind of flow, when as much as we can. Of course, it's going to drop away sometimes. But my question to you is long-winded. I know I'm watching you follow along there, but when we think of that, like getting beyond the need of charity, or like, you know, like there's also that analogy of if the airplane's going down, you put the gas mask on yourself first, like, and then you put the gas mask on others. I'm wondering like what you see in your service employment or in the community that you work in, because I know you've talked about the difficulties working in healthcare, and I'm sure any healthcare worker that's listening that lives in any country could probably reflect on the difficulties of working in healthcare. But like that idea that we have to be fully needless from in that way to be of true service. Like how do you see that reflected in your work? And in your life, I guess, too, because you also serve in other ways, not just in the where you work. Was that a clear question?
Yes and no. It became a long question.
It was
more
of like a
long intro to a question.
Yeah, it was a thought spew and then a question.
Yeah, and I thought of a lot of things actually when you were speaking, which I hope that doesn't mean that I wasn't really listening, but yeah, because you were speaking about your everyday practice and how things go. If your pan is not the pan you needed for your perfect pancakes, then everything is ruined. And I think sometimes I feel like we made it too comfortable for ourselves. If it's not absolutely perfect, if we don't get that 10 or 15 or 30 minutes of meditation in the morning, oh, then it's ruined. If we don't get our perfect pancake with chia and spirulina and all that, oh, body is getting ruined and everything gets put on its head. But we also forget that we're living in such privilege, and it hasn't looked like this ever before, really. Like, the whole world, like, gone through famine, and if we're looking way back, there wasn't a meditation practice that you had to do, or eating that healthy breakfast or anything, or else the day would be destroyed. Like, because then it would mean that anybody who goes through war or famine or anything like that couldn't achieve a high grade of spirituality, or because then, oh, it's somebody's bombing. I can't focus on my sadhana. Like, the sadhana is continuous, right? It's every day. And I think by having that awareness of what is happening and what is true and what is truth. Mm. And this is something that I'm also like, because I love my porridge in the morning and I like it a certain way. I've been conditioned in this way, but it's also interesting to see why those conditionings have arose or how they arose. And if I can look at it that way, then yes, I can still have my porridge, I can still have my perfect pancakes, but I'm not dependent on them to in any ways know or have that truth within me and actually find that. Mm-hmm. So that was a little answer to your question.
Can I reply to that?
Go for it.
And then I'll come back to my question. No, but I loved what you said. I really loved what you said, because two things, I'm probably going to digress now, but I'll be quick. Two things. One is that the human being naturally, like, we expect or we desire perfection on the level of the waking state. And like you really hit the nail on the head there when you said about the truth. And I'm wondering, what is your definition of truth, or how you differentiate as you move through the world the difference between truth and untruth? And I'm going to come back to my other question after.
Good question, and a hard question also to put words on, I feel. I think you said a while ago that what is true is that what is unchanging, and it really resonated with me. And I really enjoy that saying, because when I look to myself, on the superficial level, I've changed in many ways, both physically, mentally, emotionally, and my thoughts are not the same as they were 20 years ago or 2 years ago. And some of the thoughts are exactly the same. But in essence, I feel like I haven't changed at all. And I see that so many times with meeting a person that's 90 or 75 or 100. And in essence, they resonate that, like, oh, like my body is not what it was. But it's not I, like it's not that they are their bodies. They in essence know that the I or the what they're speaking about is something outside of them. And that is changing. And that is, I resonate with that. And so when you said that what is truth is what is unchanging, it is that. Mm-hmm. And like, you can't, or I can't, at least not now, put words on it or describe it. Mm-hmm. But I think everybody, and I actually think everybody definitely who's listening, knows that. And that is truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you're kind of really beautifully describing Vivek and Vairagya, because Vivek is that discernment of differentiating with eyes open. What is unchanging is real, which is the ultimate reality, which is changing up and down. What is born must decay. What arises must fall. That is the untruth or the unreality. And Swamiji would say that the two birds of sadhana are the each wing is one is Vivek, because we discern, and then it's Vairagya, which I feel like we've been talking about that for the last half an hour, which is that non-attachment, that non-binding to our thoughts and to our conditions and our beliefs and our pancakes and our disciplined routines, and like actually how they kind of so beautifully reflect each other, you know? Like, one kind of leads to the other and vice versa. And then this kind of naturally leads me back to my previous question, which was about getting beyond the need of charity or getting beyond need in order to be of service to others. How can we arrive at that place of needlessness ourselves, within ourselves, arrive at that stillness that you talked about, to be in the chaos of the world and be of service as a part of our, whether it's, we can call it our work because we feel it's work, or whether we consider it seva, which is selfless service, or whether we consider it charity, but like that way of interacting with people, and that way of moving in relationship and offering that space, like how do we get there as a healthcare practitioner or healthcare professional, and as yogis, as the people that are listening, you know, I feel like people that are into yoga tend to like have that kind of open heart and want to do good in the world. But to do good in the world, we have to be good ourselves, which you beautifully described before as knowing that self-worth or that wholeness within yourself.
It feels like I have a lot of questions from you that are still unanswered, because I think this is actually a tough thing as a healthcare professional, because seva or service in itself, like it comes actually for me without any want for getting anything back. That is pure seva, like I'm doing it from my heart. But also as a healthcare professional, that is my work. I'm not just doing that because I love service. I'm doing it because I have to pay my rent. I have to pay my food. And it's still a bit caught from way back, where it was just that, a calling, a service. So why should you get paid? This is a service. This is a call. You're getting paid in that good feeling of giving, which is true in a sense, but also it doesn't work in today's age. And that's why nurses and other healthcare professionals are in many, many places very underpaid. and underappreciated. Because you were speaking about the airplane, where you have to first take care of yourself. You first take your mask on, your oxygen mask on, and then you put it on the kid or the one in need. And that is so true. And then I just had this picture in my head that us as healthcare professionals are putting on ours first, but our employer is pulling it off. Okay. So in sense, we're like anybody who works in a healthcare profession does it because they see the value in providing service. I think I forgot your other question. It was about doing good for yourself so you can do good for others.
Well, yeah, it's kind of related. Like what you're saying,
those two
like
questions.
Taking care of oneself, doing good to oneself, so then you can do good to others. But I just, when you're speaking, yeah, of course, like it is naturally different when you're employed somewhere, you're getting paid. But like that, going back to that essence you talked about before, like, you know, we're leading up to the Positive Lamb Trek. We're doing this big fundraiser, which we'll talk about later. But those kids in India, you've went there and volunteered your time and your energy and spent time with them because at the essence, you wanted to be of service to them. You wanted to bring them some good energy and do all the things that you did with them. So it's like, at the essence, wouldn't you say that to be a nurse, to be of service in your work, to be of service to me as your partner, to your family, what you are, and to be of service to children in India, the essence, kind of the root awareness has to be fanned, wouldn't you say? That's kind of my, like the spark, the ember is there to be compassionate and to practice giving. But in order to do that on whatever level it is, whether it's work or family or charity, like that ember within, that flame within, of that awareness has to kind of remain lit. Otherwise, like burnout seems like inevitable.
Yeah, I think there's always the risk, I guess, of doing too much. But then you also have to ask yourself the question, why are you doing it? What is that self-fulfilling need you have that you have to do service until you burn out? That's not service to me. Then what is that root of, like, you're having to give until you're giving up on yourself? Because, like, Sri Nisargadatta was saying that, what was he saying?
He said that in order to be of charity, be in service, you have to be beyond the need of charity.
Okay, exactly. Yeah, so if you're giving so much, putting so much time into charity that you yourself is getting burned out and needs charity, then that's the opposite of what he's saying.
Then it's a double charity need.
Yeah, exactly. They're still going to need the charity, especially when you're not going to be able to provide them the charity.
Yeah.
But now you're also going to need that charity. Yeah. So while giving to others, we obviously still need to be mindful of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But that's also what's so beautiful with service, that it can be done on the most minuscule level and still have a profound effect.
Nice.
On the person that is being serviced, because again, like, service seva to me is not for me to have the positive effects and I'm doing this so I'm going to feel good. It's great, obviously, but in essence, you're doing that for that truth, because you're knowing that you are, this is where the ESL is picking up, hard, but no, you're doing it as a service to that truth. Mm-hmm. And we're coming up to that, the Positive Lamb track for the kids in India. We're talking about the healthcare profession where it's highs and lows, but seva can be just helping somebody with picking up, like, with a grocery bag, mm-hmm. carrying them to their car because they're looking like they're struggling. You might lose a minute of your life, but mm-hmm. like that everyday seva is as important as any other because you're seeing the value in somebody else, and that selflessness. So it is a really good quote from him where, like, yes, you can do all the charity in the world and you're the most charitable person ever, but if that leads to you having to need charity by yourself.
When you were speaking, I just kind of had this thought. Self-serving self. Like when we are established in that awareness of our worth, which equals that awareness of our wholeness, our sense of that I that is independent on the changing body, then we can practice seva, whether we're, like you said, 90 years old or 30 years old, because we're living that awareness that each and every being is that same light, that same being as me. So then it kind of, the seva, it gets inspired naturally because you see someone struggling and then there is that kind of desire that comes to be of service, that it comes from that awareness that that person is me, that person is cut from the same cloth, if you will, because it's coming from the same life source. So this is also making me think, because before we started recording, we were kind of thinking about a scripture, because as you or some of the listeners know, this season I've kind of asking some of the guests to bring scriptures and read from scriptures that inspire them. So we were kind of talking about charity, service. And I found this great little talk from Nisargadatta that I thought was very fitting to our conversation. So the questioner asks Nisargadatta, why don't you take part in social work? Which I would say social work is service work. And he says, but I am doing nothing else all the time. And what is the social work you want me to do? Patchwork is not for me. My stand is clear. Produce to distribute. Feed before you eat. Give before you take. Think of others before you think of yourself. Only a selfless society based on sharing can be stable and happy. This is the only practical solution. If you do not want it, fight. I just thought that was, like, really beautiful, because he's saying, I'm living it all the time. And it's like, then later on he goes to say that a society based on sharing doesn't need specialized social workers because everybody is cared for. Of course, you know, we always need healthcare professionals, especially like those that are in medicine, but in general, you know, I think that's a really beautiful, interesting way of expressing how we live that knowledge of the self. What do you think?
It's a really beautiful answer, because again, he points out that, or the question and answer in its totality points out that doing social work or doing something that benefits others doesn't have to be creating a charity or taking a plane to Ukraine or to the Middle East to help out right there. It can be so much less, but in essence, so much more. Because if you're doing something every day, in every action that you do that is selfless, or that is putting somebody else, not in front of you, but next to you, then that is going to do way more than you doing one big act one time. So like he's saying, that's all he does. And if we want a society that is happy, that is peaceful, then we need to put everybody next to us, not behind us. And not, well, like in front of us works, because if the other person is putting you in front of them, then I would say we shouldn't look at it like front and back. It's side to side. And I also like how he says that if you don't want it, then fight. And it's so much fighting going on, because we are constantly putting ourselves in front, and we want to have, and yeah. So it's a great point of how something small can be so important, and like just exactly that.
Yeah, and I think this is a great point, great moment to segue into sharing a little bit about the Positive Lamb Trek and also our self-care retreat weekend for healthcare professionals. I think, you know, they're two separate things, but yet sort of we keep saying essence, like have the same kind of essence, like we have to take care of ourselves. We have to do our individual practice. We have to find that stillness, that peace, that harmony within in order to share it with others. So the sharing with others part for me for a long time has been through the Positive Lamb charity. And I just want to quickly invite people to consider walking with us on June 15th or supporting the trek at trek.positivelamb.com. We're fundraising to send 75 kids to school for a year through walks. So Simon and I are walking 21 kilometers through London with a big group of friends. And like you're saying, like it's not even about money. If someone doesn't have the money to donate to, say, a cause, for example, this is my cause, this is what in this context we're talking about. But if someone doesn't have money, then someone could join for the walk. If someone isn't able to join for the walk, they could give money. If someone can't do either, just getting a little informed about what it's like to be a child living with HIV in India and sharing that story with somebody else, that in itself is service. You know, like when we think of all the charities, and obviously big charities have their place in society. Like you were saying, like, you know, we need people to go to fight wars and, or not fight wars, be peace activists in wars and all those things. But a little impact can be made in the life of somebody that's in need with very little effort. So that's the Positive Lamb Trek, and we'd love for people to check it out.
And yes, like you said, there is the need for peace activists and aid workers in war territories. So not saying that people should not do that, but just saying that one doesn't have to do that to be of service. If you can, great, go for it. But yeah, there's ways to be of service every day. And yes, Positive Lamb Trek. Again, I find it's so beautiful the few times I've been there and met with the kids. And I guess it's also a part of culture in India with being a guest. You're being treated
as God.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Guest is God.
Yes. But all these kids, they are doing seva when you're coming. They are just being so beautiful. When visiting the kids, it was so evident that it's, oh, of course, this is something that I also want to help with and want to be part in. Mm-hmm. And then it's beautiful because the positive lamp has made it so easy, really, so accessible to be of service to these kids, which is great. And the trek is a great way to do just that. And like you said, either by participating and walking and spreading awareness, or if it's by helping by donating financially, or like you also said, just sharing with a friend on social media just to get awareness out. That is also being of service to these kids and mm-hmm. to the foundation and the charity. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Thanks for that. And I also wanted to add, too, that like your expression about visiting the kids in India at our partner home and how they're offering something to us, to the visitors. And for me, I think what I receive when I go there to spend time with them is that real expression of the pure possibility that children hold universally. Like every single child holds the same potential. And you can see so clearly when a child receives a good education, good nutritious food, a loving home, a good community, then they totally thrive. And people, when they hear children living with HIV in India, there's kind of this association with sick kids. But actually, the work that Positive Lamb Foundation is doing is really supporting kids who are thriving because of the work. And that's, we're very blessed and, like you said before, privileged that we have the ability to go there and spend time with them and then relay the message to the donors or the listeners. And I think for me, it's just that clear example of that creative intelligence, that one being that is shining through all kids and people.
Yeah, and I liked how you said that with kids that get good education, nutritious food, a loving home, have all the possibilities in the world for whatever, but also kids that has and know that they have been provided for by multiple people. There's a great gratefulness mm-hmm. in there as well. And I think everybody who have ever been helped or has been on the receiving end of service feel like they want to give it back.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And I think that's also the brilliance of seva, of service, that it kind of creates this, what goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. That it sets a wave of that person feeling like, yes, I've been helped, I want to give this to others. Mm-hmm.
And that sense of being helped from someone that, or as someone or many people that view you as an equal, which I think is something so important for the kids that are supported through Positive Lamb, because in their society, they're treated as less because they have HIV or they're associated with HIV. And they get so empowered through the partner organizations and through knowing, like you just said, that there's so many people all over the world that are saying, like, not only are you amazing, but you're totally deserving and your HIV has nothing to do about anything. Like, and that for them is something that differentiates them in their community as they grow into adults, is the fact that they have HIV doesn't make them any less or make anybody more. It just, again, comes back to that worth that we talked about too. And I love too when you were just saying about that circular sharing, it's like the ripple out effect of the pond. You know, you don't know how far those acts of kindness and sharing will really trickle out. And that's how we change the world, as if, you know, our little individual world. So thanks for sharing and the inspiration of always supporting Positive Lamb and the kids. And now, because, you know, that could actually be a whole nother podcast episode, just before we wrap up, I'd love to just share with the listeners about our December retreat here in Sweden in the magical forest. So maybe you can just speak about a little bit about what we're offering and who it's for and who can come. That's the same thing. And where to sign up.
So, yeah, in December, we are hosting a retreat for healthcare, people working in healthcare within. And it's a, we call it a self-care retreat, or En vårdande helg in Swedish. And yeah, like we talked about before, to be able to be of service, you yourself need to have that energy. And healthcare workers are a profession in general that are running a higher risk of burnout, of depression. So it is important to also take care of yourself, to be able to take care of others. So we wanted to create a weekend for just that self-care. It will be placed in Shambhala Gatherings, an hour outside of Västerås, Sweden.
For those that aren't Swedish.
I don't know the length from Stockholm.
2 hours.
It's 2 hours?
Yeah.
And 2 hours from Stockholm. And we'll be right by a beautiful lake. It will be December, so it will be cold, but still magical and beautiful. And yeah, we will have nutritious food. There will be daily yoga classes, meditation, will be breath work and other movement modalities. Will be an amazing sauna right on the lake with the possibilities of having a dip in the cold water. And yeah, it will be a space for healthcare personnel to take a break and to tend to themselves, so that they and we can better take care of others. That's kind of the plan, right?
Yeah, nice. And just want to reiterate that this whole weekend has really been developed and curated for those people that are in the helping professions that have, like you said, a higher risk of burnout and compassion fatigue. And we're really going to work on helping people build those daily practices that cultivate resilience from stress, anxiety, depression, burnout, and how to take a restful weekend. It's not just a restful weekend, but it's really a chance to get some tools into your self-care tool belt that you can take with you into your work, into your life. So like everything that we're talking about in this last hour can be lived. So how can we build up our resilience, our inner strength, our inner knowingness of that wholeness, of that stillness amongst the chaos, like you said, Simon, and live it each day and become better healthcare workers, become better people, or not even become better, but just be our best selves, because we're already better. Everybody's doing their best. But just to live more easily in a world that's anything but. So everybody can check it out. I'll put the website in the show notes. It's just my website domain, bobbycladel.com/healthcare-retreat. So that's December 19th, and registration is open. And if anybody has any questions or wants to reach out to us, let us know. It's very exciting. Lots of things coming up. And yeah, Simon, I've got my three questions for you to wrap the episode up. So the first question is, describe your sadhana in three words. I think I asked you this.
I have this question during the kirtan.
Yeah, well, for those that didn't listen to the Dimension of Pure Love episode, Simon, your sadhana in three words.
Openness, consistency, and eagerness.
Eagerness, nice. And a scripture that is inspiring your practice right now.
Well, I'm reading Krishnamurti right now, The First and Last Freedom. It's not a scripture, but it's part his monologues during his speeches, and it's part question and answers, like I Am that we just read from. And I like reading from different types of books and scriptures, so that one is the one I'm reading right now, and I'm finding great value in it.
Nice. And just to finish, sum up this conversation in one sentence.
P.S. Pancakes and satsang. What goes around comes around.
Nice. What goes around comes around. Great finish to this. Great finish to a great episode, and just want to finish by really, really appreciating you, giving you all my love. You've been such a cheerleader behind the scenes of A Curious Yogi podcast since I had this great idea a few years back. So a lot of love and appreciation for the support and for finally coming on to be a guest. I know you're sweet and you say you're a man of sweet of little words, but you have a lot of brilliance to say, and I always appreciate your expression, and I love sharing satsang with you, and I just really love and appreciate you.
Thank you very much, and that would be a sweet a few words. My words when I say it are big, not little.
Ooh, okay, well, he's got the sweetest eagle.
Cut that out. It's been great to join you in this conversation, and yeah, it's always a treat having satsang with you. I know you're always very earnest and eager also to have satsang wherever you go. And yes, I really enjoy listening more than I do speaking. But it was a great conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/acuriousyogi. And please, please leave a review. It really helps the show reach more people. All right, friend, let's stay curious, connected, and keep walking the path together. In oneness and delight, this is Bobby signing off until next time.